What is going on, everybody? Welcome back. This is For the Numbers, presented by FTN Fantasy. Adam Pfeiffer here on Wednesday, the 1st of May. It is not going to be May. It is May. We are back with the NFL Draft Recap edition of the podcast because the draft was crazy, and I can't break it down by myself. I need help. So to do that, bringing in a colleague from FTN, it's Mike Randall. Mike, first of all, hat tip for all of the great draft coverage we had, especially we did videos, we did live draft blog, and you were ahead of all of it. It was fun working with you, and now it's fun to chat with you. How's it going?
It's going great, man, and kudos to you. What we did is we gave the people what they wanted. You want to sit there, you're going to watch the draft on TV, we get it, ESPN, NFL Network, whatever you want to do, and then you want to see the fantasy impact. So we were able to give that to you right away, the live draft blog. You were killing it all the nights you were in there, and the videos, and the write-ups, and everything. So we want you to get ahead of the curve here. We want people to have an idea, where are these players, who are the values, are you doing best ball drafts on Underdog, what are you doing? We gave it to them. So thrilled. And now the season really starts, Adam, in my mind.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's always fun when the draft comes to an end. And for me, it's already happened to me like four times with four different players where I start and I say, oh, that landing spot was the worst and I hate it and I want nothing to do with it. And then you kind of think about it and overanalyze it. And all of a sudden your opinion changes a little bit. So we're going to go through, obviously not the entire draft because we would be here for hours and hours, but in a draft where there was so much emphasis on the offensive skill position players, right? You have six quarterbacks in the top 12. You have all the receivers. It is going to make, first of all, fantasy football in general very interesting, but especially Dynasty, because rookie drafts where you have super flex formats, a lot of really good players could be getting pushed down. So I wanted to have you on the pod here. Just break down the draft. What were some of your most interesting takeaways? It could be from fantasy, but we were talking before we hopped on the podcast, from a real-life perspective, some of these teams just had really good drafts. So, obviously, at the top, we knew Caleb Williams would be the first overall selection. I mean, the landing spot, I've talked to many people about this, and nobody can find an example where a rookie quarterback has come in to a landing spot in a situation that's been this good. Now, a lot of that obviously has to do with the fact that 9 times out of 10, the team that's picking first overall has the worst team in the NFL. Wasn't the case this year with the Bears. They showed, you know, signs down the stretch. They traded for Keenan Allen. They drafted Rome Odunze. And all of a sudden, Caleb Williams, like, obviously, super flex rookie drafts, he's going as the 101 most often. But how high should we be on him in general? And even in redraft, like, does he have a chance to sneak in that top 12 in a loaded quarterback position?
Yeah, he's going later than I thought. People are still scared in best ball. I've done a couple best ball manias already. And he's going later than I think because people are still nervous to dive in. But this is a Bears team that ended the regular season winning 4 of their last 6. And they added some really nice weapons in the offseason and now with the draft. It was a smart move to go with Rome Odunze. Not easy to do. Not easy to pull the trigger because you always want to bolster the offensive line. But they now have a bevy of weapons in the backfield that they can pick from. One of them will get hot. The wide receivers are solid. You saw what DJ Moore did. He was already throwing passes to Rome Odunze. I saw that Caleb Williams already connecting with him on the way over to Chicago. So things are good. Cole Kmet, Gerald Everett. I mean, wheels up for the Bears. But you're right. This is not a team that ended, Adam, like 2-15, 6 straight losses, and did nothing in the offseason. Wheels up for the Bears offense, and they're going to let him grow, and he's going to have attempts. And we've seen rookie quarterbacks have a huge impact. I mean, Anthony Richardson last year, I understand he's a runner, but they will give them opportunities. And I still think the general public is a little slow to come around on a rookie quarterback, especially one that goes number one, because like you said, recency bias, they assume they're just not very good.
Yeah, like I wouldn't be shocked if he was better than quarterbacks in that range of like Jared Goff. Jordan Love's kind of tough because of what he did last year, but I wouldn't be shocked if he was better than Jordan Love this past season. Who else would be in that range for me? Maybe Brock Purdy, Dak Prescott. Like, it wouldn't be surprising at all if he finished ahead of a lot of those guys. And, like, I think Rome Odunze, on paper, is the wide receiver 3 on this team. Like, I think he's their second-best wide receiver. So, in either scenario, if Rome Odunze is your wide receiver 3 on your team or Keenan Allen's a wide receiver 3 on your team, you're pretty loaded, so it's hard not to be super excited about that. But Mike, talk to me about the rest of this first round. Like, I don't want to go through, you know, selection by selection, but like some of the landing spots, some of the selections that stood out the most to you, it could be as early as four to Marvin Harrison. It could be whoever, because again, when there's so much emphasis on the offensive skill positions in the draft, there's obviously going to be a ton of fantasy takeaways.
Yeah. So I always like to be contrarian here. And one of the things I grabbed already, we talk about some bet stuff as well, Adam, yeah, is the assumption is that Marvin Harrison is going to lead all rookies in receiving yardage. And listen, Marvin Harrison was the number one pick. That's what I would have done. But you have some great value there. I mean, look, this is not hard. Fantasy football doesn't have to be hard. Xavier Worthy going to the Chiefs is just so easy. And I know that hits home.
Well, funny because I just got off Main Streets with Meany. And we were talking about how I was feeling about the Chiefs trade and everything. And it's just like, I don't even get 5 minutes to just relax. I don't get 5 minutes.
Adam, he's plus 1,200 yeah, to lead rookies in receiving yardage. I don't think Rashee Rice is going to be suspended for a long period of time, but he's there. Marquise Brown certainly can get injured. We know that. Travis Kelce's 35. I mean, so that is an example of someone who is going later that I think can be because again, he fits a need who can be very, very strong for them. Back end, you saw CJ Stroud's reaction when Ricky Pearsall was taken. So if he's good enough for CJ Stroud, I think if there's a trade made and somebody is not there the beginning of the year, certainly Pearsall can do some nice things. Brian Thomas fits a need with Jacksonville. So I think we have to watch that as well. And listen, people may not like Bo Nix and people may not like J.J. McCarthy, but I think they landed in spots where they're going to get opportunity. Certainly Bo Nix is. Sean Payton may have wanted J.J. McCarthy. This could have been bluster. Who knows? But he's got a history of having success with quarterbacks. He's going to give him short to intermediate routes. Nix is extremely accurate. I get it. It's not a sexy pick, but he's going to be an opportunity to succeed as well as J.J. McCarthy. So I think there's opportunities there, and I would not be surprised. I totally agree with you if Roma Dunze ends up outproducing Marvin Harrison, Malik Nabers, because he's in an offense with a rookie quarterback where you think he's buried behind Keenan Allen, DJ Moore. That may not be the case because, of course, the Giants may struggle in offense. And Marvin Harrison, again, will have every opportunity with Arizona, but Adunze could be in a better situation to produce, especially early on. We have to see.
So, yeah, like at first I was like, seriously, like we're going to trade with the Chiefs to let them get who they want. And then I thought about it and I came to the conclusion that, look, if Brandon Bean wasn't going to draft Xavier Worthy, who cares? I know it stings because of the Patrick Mahomes thing, but go get extra draft capital. Having said that, though, for weeks before the draft, writing content about, you know, some of the best potential landing spots for the rookies. And every time I saw Xavier Worthy, I thought, and it's not, you know, it's not a hot take, but the Chiefs just made too much sense. Why? Yes, we know they need receiver help. Yes, they've been looking for that speed element since trading Tyreek Hill. But it's more the fact that what Xavier Worthy is good at and what he struggles with makes him a perfect fit for this offense. What is he good at? Obviously, he's incredibly fast. He's great on the vertical routes. He's great at ball tracking. That's great playing with Patrick Mahomes. What does he struggle with? Press coverage, winning contested catches, facing press man coverage. The Chiefs faced arguably the fewest man coverage in the NFL. Like, you can't play man coverage against the Chiefs. There's number one. Number two, okay, he struggles against press man coverage. The Chiefs have run pre-snap motion 52% of the time, according to FTN data, over the past few seasons. That's a top three rate in the NFL. So you're giving him free releases off the line of scrimmage with an Andy Reid offense that's so good at play calling and scheming touches, and you're still getting the occasional downfield shots from the best quarterback in the NFL. Is he going to see the volume that Marvin Harrison's going to see? No, but if he gets 5-6 targets per game and the role and the efficiency he can have, like, that could be terrifying. So Worthy, I think, is going in rookie drafts as early as the 104 in non-superflex, and I can't really argue that, because the other thing I have to remember, too, is you mentioned Rashee Rice's situation. And yes, they added Marquise Brown. It's a one-year kind of prove-it deal. I would guarantee that Hollywood Brown, unless he just really wants to stay in Kansas City, is not back next year, because he'll probably play well enough to get a contract elsewhere. And the Chiefs clearly don't feel the need to give wide receivers massive contracts, because, newsflash, they just won two Super Bowls without Tyreek Hill. So Worthy could be the 1A, 1B in this offense as soon as next season. And then, of course, Travis Kelce just got extended, but you can, like you mentioned, he's 35.
Yeah, and if you look at best ball drafts, so the you have Keenan Allen, Pickens, Adunze, Cooper, Rice, Kirk, Jaden Reed, Terry McLaurin. Get it, okay? After that, it gets real interesting. I'm talking now wide receiver 36. So all these guys, Adam, are basically outside of wide receiver 3 in underdog best ball. Marquise Brown, Calvin Ridley, Brian Thomas, Jordan Addison, and then Xavier Worthy. So you're going to take Brian Thomas and Jacksonville ahead of Xavier Worthy? I don't see it, because you know that Andy Reid and the Chiefs will find a way to use him. They tried to ram the ball to Mecole Hardman for all those years. It just didn't work, but he had opportunities. So yes, I think that is a path. You're with a legendary quarterback in an offense that's friendly, with the possibility of target share with Rashee Rice getting suspended. So it just fits. And that's what you and I talked about before we started. We want teams that had a plan, that executed the plan, and seemed to make sense in what they do. I don't know if Xavier Worthy is going to be good or not. It could be John Ross. But I know that he's in a really good situation, and I know that his current ADP of wide receiver 40 is way too low.
Yeah, like, I like Brian Thomas Jr., but no shot I would take him over Worthy. Like, I think the one way I think that could be a mistake is if Brian Thomas Jr., which I think he does, I think this does happen. Calvin Ridley last year left a ton of fantasy points on the table. He had 24 end zone targets. It was the most in the NFL. He had a lot of drops, a lot of just almost touchdowns. And with Brian Thomas, how good he is at being aware of where the sideline is, and especially in the end zone, I think he leads his team in end zone targets right away. But still, he's competing with Kirk and Ingram, who should still be 1 and 2 in targets. Travis Etienne took a step forward as a pass catching running back last season. Yeah, like, there's going to be spots, don't get me wrong, where you see Worthy get overdrafted. But if you're comparing him to the fellow rookies, like, obviously the top three. Let me ask you this. Draft capital is a little bit different. Offense is definitely different. But in terms of volume, like, what do you think of somebody like Ladd McConkey, who the Chargers trade up in the early second round to get? 57, I think it is, percent of their targets gone from last season. And yes, it's going to be a run-first offense, but if you give Ladd McConkey like 19 to 20% of the team's targets year one, I mean, that's going to be – he's going to push like wide receiver 3 status most likely if he wins out and becomes the clear target in this offense like we expect him to.
Well, here's my answer to that. If you look at Greg Roman, who's now the offensive coordinator, mm-hmm. came from a run-first offense. Was Zay Flowers not an impressive fantasy right. asset last year? Of course he was. So Ladd McConkey is going to be pushed down by the narrative that they run too much. Ladd McConkey is going on underdog right now, wide receiver 46. He's going behind Christian Watson. Again, obviously dynamic receiver, but has to stay healthy. Adonai Mitchell is at wide receiver 47 for Indy. Curtis Samuel, your guy in Buffalo, again, sort of a nebulous role. We're not sure. We always heard about what the Curtis Samuel role is going to be, but it's never materialized. So sure, Ladd McConkey is right there, wide receiver 46. You can get him in round 9 in best ball drafts. Wouldn't be shocked if he's a wide receiver 1 on the Chargers, which, as you saw with Zay Flowers last year, was worth something.
Yeah, I wonder if Roman utilizes him the same way he did Flowers, because Flowers, especially to start the season, is getting a lot of targets, but he was like bottom 10 in ADOT. He was like top 10 in or bottom 10 in yards before the catch perception. There's a lot of schemed touches. But in PPR leagues, I don't care. Give me 7 catches. I don't care if they go for 62 yards. And obviously Flowers would get the occasional deep shots, but like, if yes, there's like both things can be true, like you said. Like, they can be way more run heavy than we've seen from previous Justin Herbert offenses. That's more worrisome for Quentin Johnston and Joshua Palmer, who we don't expect to lead this team in targets. You can still have a 20% target share on a run-first offense and be really fantasy relevant. It'd be concerning if he was getting a 14% target share on a run-first offense. Then it's like, we want nothing to do with you. So, yeah, you said Ladd was going after A.D. Mitchell. Like, I love A.D. Mitchell, but that's wild to me. Again, it's early in the process. Obviously, it's the first day of May. But Ladd, I think you can make the case, could be the wide receiver 4 in rookie drafts. Or not in rookie drafts, in the wide receiver 4 among the rookies in redraft.
Yeah, Flowers last year was top 30 in fantasy points per game. Targets top 25, 108. Receptions top 25, 77. And to your point, started the year. So here's a little DFS tidbit for week 1, maybe, right? Targets for Zay Flowers, 10, 5, 10. That's how he started. And by the way, he had 3 red zone targets in the first week against Houston. So all I'm saying is Ladd McConkey is way undervalued right now. Not saying he's going to be a top 20 wide receiver week one, but I am saying that where you get him, he's certainly going to be cheap in DFS. And I think he has value in underdog as well in your seasonal leagues. Because if you leave him on the waiver wire, you don't spend a last round pick and redraft, you know what's going to happen? He's going to be gone in week 2. Unless you do fab, you're going to spend a lot of your fab. But this is a player with huge upside that no one's going to think of because, oh, the Chargers just run the ball. So to Baltimore, Zay Flowers ended up with 25 targets in the first 3 weeks last year.
Yeah, overall season for Zay Flowers, 23% target share, 20% target per out run rate. And that was with, you know, it wasn't the most loaded offense, right? Like, Andrews was healthy at that time. Bateman was doing next to nothing, but This team in LA doesn't have anything close to Mark Andrews, who's going to compete for targets. And we thought they would add somebody in the backfield. They drafted, you know, Kamani Vidal, the 6th round, who I actually think could be this year's Isaiah Pacheco. But they don't have anybody that's going to get anything close to Austin Eckler's receiving workload. So if you just give Ladd McConkey alongside Justin Herbert, say you give him the same exact rates as Flowers last year, 23% target share, 20% target per out run rate. Sign me up all day for that. Let's go back to some of the other players in the first round, though. Obviously, a lot of the quarterbacks, like you mentioned Bo and you mentioned JJ. I mean, top 12 draft capital for both. McCarthy gets the more favorable landing spot, obviously. Do we think he starts right away? Sam Darnold's obviously there. But like whoever it is, like once McCarthy is under center, he's going to be fantasy relevant because A, we saw Nick Mullins have like 300-plus yard games down the stretch last season in this offense. Yes, they were in some favorable matchups, I think Detroit twice, but like I trust Kevin O'Connell's scheme. Yes, they'll be without Hockenson for a large majority of the season, but you still have the best wide receiver on the planet. You still have Jordan Addison. Aaron Jones, in my opinion, is still efficient and an elite pass-catching running back. And McCarthy can give you some rushing production too. So I don't think he's going to be, like we mentioned with Caleb, I don't think it'll be a situation where he's pushing that top 15, top 12, but like, how much do we like these quarterbacks that didn't go in the top 3? Because, again, like, even the Denver landing spot, everybody wants to talk about how Bo doesn't throw down the field and everything was behind line of scrimmage. And, yeah, that hurts his upside a little bit, but that makes him a perfect fit in Sean Payton's offense because that's all Russell Wilson did last year. They were among the top teams in the league in screen percentage.
It comes down to your risk tolerance. Right now, Bo Nix is going as the quarterback 31. The only quarterback in underdog he's going ahead of is Russell Wilson. And my guess is that's because some people still think Russell Wilson will not be the day one starter. I can't believe we're living in a world, Adam, where Russell Wilson is going after Bo Nix, but here we are. Now, J.J. McCarthy, he's right ahead of Bryce Young. He's ahead of Derek Carr. He's ahead of Daniel Jones. He's behind Justin Fields, Geno Smith, that sort of area. I agree with you. I think J.J. McCarthy starts week one. I do. I don't see the benefit here. I know he's young. He's going to be given every opportunity. He has a ton of weapons. Sam Darnold is not long in the tooth here. I mean, you're going to start him for a couple games, 3 games, then you're going to sit him. I think McCarthy starts. I don't know about Bo Nix. He'd have to look good. I could see a situation. You know, he struggles as well. He's not the perfect prospect. He struggles in the preseason. But I think McCarthy starts week one. And if he does, quarterback 28 or 27, wherever he is a nice, nice deal. Here's my question. Assuming he starts week one, who would you rather have, him or Drake May? Drake May's at quarterback 24.
Yeah, I mean, if both are starting, give me J.J. McCarthy. Like, Drake May will give you some rushing production too, and I like the moves they made. I like Jalen Polk. I like Javon Baker. DeMario Douglas was good for them last year, but it's just a completely different beast when you're talking about skill position players from New England to Minnesota. And the offense is scheme. Like, Kevin O'Connell, they've been pass heavy in the past. I just like the Patriots are probably going to be more of a run first, win off their defense, conservative offense. They were talking about changing and playing more outside zone yesterday when they interviewed Ramondre Stevenson, which is interesting. But yeah, like JJ should be the quarterback 3 among the rookies if he's starting day one for fantasy. And that doesn't mean he's somebody you're starting in redraft leagues, but in 2 quarterback leagues, like, if I have an elite player like a Josh Allen or a Mahomes, and I have J.J. McCarthy as my 2nd quarterback, like, I don't think that's the end of the world, especially if you're loaded elsewhere.
And I'm more comfortable with J.J. McCarthy than Deshaun Watson. I'm getting worried about Deshaun Watson. I mean, that last year should have went a lot better. You want to say he bounces back this year, okay. But McCarthy's got a lot of weapons, and he's playing indoors. and he's got the best receiver in the league. He's got some, you know, Aaron Jones out of the backfield. And like you said, he can run. I think he's undervalued.
You mentioned Ricky Pearsall. I mean, nobody had Ricky Pearsall projected to go in the first round, let alone to San Francisco of all teams. Obviously, the trade rumors surrounding Deebo Samuel and Brandon Ayuk, as soon as you see that selection at 31st overall, it's like, okay, they already have something. They already have something in the works. Somebody's getting traded. And it didn't materialize. And they talked about how like they weren't really ever close to trading them. And as soon as the first round, second round ended, you knew they wanted relatively high draft capital for a trade. That was out of the window. So maybe Deebo Samuel gets traded still at some point. But right now, like, I don't see us. Like, how many times, Mike, do we go into a week? And I wrote about it in the huge game by game article pretty much every week. Is it a Brandon Ayuk week? Is it a Deebo week? Is it a Kittle week? We know it's going to be McCaffrey week. But it's very rare for this team, as good as they are, to have all four of those players be really good in fantasy on a weekly basis. So if Ricky Pearsall comes in and they don't trade one of the receivers, despite how good the offense is, despite the talent of the player, I don't see how we're starting him any week ever.
No, he's not. Right now, he's going wide receiver 65. The only advantage with him is a risk reward. Like you said, we find out one of those receivers are traded, then he's killing his wide receiver 65, 66 value as he's living among the area of.
Where would you rank? Let's say Deebo Samuel's traded before the season starts. Where would you rank Ricky Pearsall among the rookies? Like, obviously, I would imagine the top three is still solidified, still probably have Worthy ahead of him and Ladd. Would he be six? You can make the case. Is he ahead of Brian Thomas? Is he ahead of Keon Coleman?
Yeah, I'm not high on Brian Thomas. I think Brian Thomas is going to take some time to make an impact. See, I think in that offense with Shanahan, Pearsall can make an impact right away. I'm worried about Thomas. He's giving me vibes that like it's going to take some time. He's obviously behind a couple players there. Lawrence wasn't great last year. The Jacksonville offense was inconsistent. Now you're going to this well-oiled machine in San Francisco where you can get me 4 and 60 fairly easily, provided that Samuel and Ayuk are not there.
Yeah, so that's for me. Ricky Pearsall is still kind of a wait and see. Dynasty wise, like Debo's probably gone next year, so like there's a chance he's the second wide receiver on this team. And we know the scheme, everything. It's as fantasy friendly as there is. Let's talk about the backfield a little bit, because we didn't love this class on paper going into the draft, but some of these landing spots are pretty interesting. Jonathan Brooks, they trade up a little bit in the second round to get him in Carolina. And whether it works or not, give Carolina credit, because this entire offseason has been dedicated to helping Bryce Young, right? Damian Lewis, Robert Hunt at guard. They hired Dave Canales. They trade for Deontay Johnson. They draft Xavier Leggett in the first round, which we can mention him too. They trade up for Jonathan Brooks. And they draft Jatavion Sanders. Like, they are trying to help Bryce Young. Jonathan Brooks, to me, ACL, without the ACL injury, it doesn't matter. The clear RB1 in this class. Because for me, the appeal and why I've always been so high on him is how natural he is catching the football. And we know that translates to fantasy success. Now you have him in Dave Canales' offense, which last year, maybe it was because they didn't have any depth at the running back position. But Rashad White, top 10 in targets, top 5 in receptions. He was second among all running backs in snap share behind McCaffrey at almost 80%. And second among running backs in route participation at almost 69%. Does Brooks see that role right out of the gate? I don't think so. But you think Chuba Hubbard and Miles Sanders, who was phased out of the offense halfway through the year, if he's healthy, they are not keeping him from potentially getting that role by week 6, week 7. And man, with how good of he is, how good of a pass catcher he is, like there's potential there. We all wanted Dallas, right? Everybody wanted Dallas to be the spot. But the more I think about it, especially with Dave Canales there, I'm liking the spot for Jonathan Brooks.
Yeah, Jonathan Brooks' ADP is not going to be down here much longer. 103.6 RB31, hanging above Zach Moss and below Nick Chubb. I like this spot. I think they're going to go to him fairly early. Sure, will he take the first handoff, Adam, of the 2024 season for the Panthers? Probably not, but I think he's going to make an impact, a huge impact on this team. Forget Miles Sanders. Chuba Hubbard is a Jag. He's just a guy. You're looking back at a player who can absolutely do damage both on the ground and in the air. And this is who Dave Canales wanted. He came from Tampa Bay. Rashad White was the same type of back. Now this is the back that he actually chose. Bryce Young is not going to be taking unnecessary risks, so it's still going to be a conservative offense. I like Jonathan Brooks. I like his landing spot. I think people who are worried about this being a two-headed or three-headed monster are crazy. He's talented. He's the best back in this class. He's with a conservative quarterback. He can easily beat out Chuba Hubbard, if not right away, then certainly as it moves on. And I don't even expect this to be a split like it was with Detroit last year, because David Montgomery is a hell of a lot better back than Chuba Hubbard is.
Yeah, I think for redraft purposes, you may not feel great starting him weeks 1 through 5, but week 6, week 7, like, he could be, trying to find an example. We see it every year with a rookie running back who not that relevant the first half of the season, and all of a sudden weeks, you know, 9 through 18, they're the running back 7 in fantasy because they finally get the workload, they learn the offense fully, and they're obviously talented players. So, We've been updating the ranks of FTN Fantasy throughout the week, really. And whatever you want, Dynasty, Superflex, Rookie Only, Half PPR, Full PPR, everything we have. And I actually have to double check where I have Brooks. Do you know, for redraft, do you happen to know where you have him? Because I think he's probably going to be, like, if you put him, like, in between, like, 18 and 24, I don't think that's crazy.
Yeah, I need to. I will have him by the time the season kicks off. Injuries assume that they don't happen. I will definitely have him. This is the best way I can put it. He will be well ahead of Jaylen Warren.
Yeah,
that's my barometer. I will probably have him also ahead of Tony Pollard. Yep. So that is the area I see. You know, I could.
So it's probably around like 22 to 26.
Maybe, yeah, right around there. DeAndre Swift is 25. See, I'm a little bit more worried about Swift than I am about Brooks, because Swift's ADP is higher. And I do think Khalil Herbert and, oh, by the way, Roschon Johnson are a little bit more of a three-headed monster RBBC threat.
And Roschon is so good at pass pro. Like, I still think third down snaps are going to be there for him.
Right. Jonathan Brooks can get half the snaps at him and then still be in the two-minute drill. So that's a better value for me. I will have him near RB2, the back end of RB2 territory, by the time we get going at the end of August.
Yeah. I actually want to look something up with Chuba Hubbard, but while I do that, we also had, I think, one of the more underrated landing spots in this draft class when you're looking at the position, and that's Arizona with Trey Benson. Like, James Conner has been super productive. He's also missed multiple games every season. And this could be the last year of his contract. And all of a sudden, you could fast forward to 2025, and the core of this offense could be Kyler, Marvin Harrison, Trey McBride, and then Trey Benson in the backfield. Thoughts on Benson? And then while you're at it, Marshawn Lloyd, too. Like, everybody's talking about this Josh Jacobs contract situation that could really – they have a potential out. It's really not the contract that it really looked like when he first got signed. A.J. Dillon, they brought him back, but Marshawn Lloyd's going to take his job. And – look, Jacobs, if he's not there, I mean, we could be looking at Marshawn Lloyd as the lead running back in an ascending Green Bay offense to Jordan Love as early as next season.
For dynasty purposes, I love both of them. In redraft and best ball, I took James Conner at pick 88 the other night, and I took Trey Benson at 105. Conner always misses time, and when he does, there was no one to take his place. We remember DeMercado, we were talking about. Trey Benson can pop in there, 21 years old, 4.39 speed. He can actually do some damage. He's going to be back there with Kyler, so he's going to certainly have rushing lanes as well. I like both players, and Lloyd and Green Bay, definitely. We've seen A.J. Dillon. Shout out to BC, my alma mater. We've seen it. It's not he working. Forget it.
It got to the point where you couldn't start him. Even Aaron Jones missed so many games last year, and you were like, yeah, I still don't want to start A.J. Dillon.
Warren Sharp put it out today, 95% conversion rate, touchdown conversion rate for Green Bay. How did A.J. Dillon have a bad year? Just go figure on that one. So, both of them I really like for Dynasty. They're great picks for me. You have a good quarterback situation in Dynasty, and you want to take them earlier than most people are. I have no problem with it. Both of which can make an impact this year, but especially Benson, because Connor's biggest advantage is when he gets hurt, no one does anything. So he comes back and he gets that full workload. It is still shocking to me that last year, the $3 million best ball mania winner had James Conner. I remember James Conner against the Eagles when we were drafting in August. You're like, why would you take James Conner during the best ball championship? He has to play at Philly against that run defense. You have four touchdowns later. So yes, there are opportunities in this offense. Still project them for negative game script as well. Really like Trey Benson, obviously in Dynasty, but even in redraft this year.
Joined by Mike Randall, my colleague at FTN. You can follow him on Twitter at Randall Rant. Mike, talk about, before we close it out with some tight ends and some more late round skill position players, talk about everything. I mean, it's been a busy time for us at FTN, right? The new site launch, we got a lot going on behind the scenes, and we obviously just did a lot of draft coverage, but it's been a busy time, I would imagine, for you. But talk about everything that everybody can look forward to in the coming weeks and months and everything going on at FTN, because it's exciting.
Yeah, what I'm thrilled about, Adam, is what we're trying to do is give the users and the subs what they want. So it's not just our content, it's what's good for you. You have a guy like Adam here who, of course, has more knowledge than anyone. And the question is, how can we use our go-to people and use that knowledge to better help you guys win your fantasy leagues, win your dynasty leagues, get good best ball information? So we have a great best ball information coming out shortly. We're going to have things in the offseason. The DFS for preseason is so lucrative, and people don't even talk about it, Adam, but it really is. So really excited. Everything is under FTN Fantasy. It is not bets. It is not daily. It is not fantasy. It's everything together. And if you come and get a subscription to us at FTN, you will not regret it, because you'll be covered in every possible aspect. So super excited. And the plan we rolled out for FTN for the draft is exactly what we're going to use moving forward. What do the subs want? What gets you the information as quickly as possible and something you can consume, whether on this podcast, whether on a video, whether on a short? We're coming and we're bringing hell with us, to quote Tombstone, the movie Tombstone. Really excited about the stuff we have going on here.
Yeah, I've just been really proud of all the hard work everybody's put in. It's been a blast. So definitely keep it locked at FTN. Close it out with some... We got to talk about the tight ends, and I want to talk about two more skill position players not at tight end, because I don't know, I'm a terrible Bills fan, or a terrible host, or both, but Keon Coleman, I want him to have 1,500 yards and 20 touchdowns every time I watch one of his press conferences. He is so easy to root for, he is hilarious, and look, he's obviously not going to step in and get the 161.5 targets per year that Stephon Diggs was averaging. That's just ludicrous to even think that. But he gives the Bills what they haven't had since Josh Allen's been the quarterback. Size, contested catchability, and he talked about it in one of his press conferences. He loves working back to the football on those kind of broken plays, extended plays, where it's kind of a scramble drill. It's a perfect quarterback to play with for that. And I think Keon Coleman gets a lot of flack for the 4.6 140, and I get it. It's not what you want to see at the combine. Everybody knows he plays way, way faster than that. And I think Keon Coleman in the screen game and after the catch is super underrated, because watching him at Florida State, they would design screens for him. And like, it's very, very overlooked, strength of his game. Right before the ball even touches his hands on a screen pass, he already knows where he's going. Like, he wastes zero movement. And I'm not saying he's Deebo Samuel or CeeDee Lamb, after the catch with screens, but he is way better after the catch than you think for somebody that's 6'4 and that size. The Bills love him. Is he going to be? I've seen a lot when he got drafted the Bills found their new Gabe Davis. I'm like, the Bills replaced Gabe Davis. They didn't draft Gabe Davis. He is not Gabriel Davis. What do you think of Keon Coleman in Buffalo? How much? I think Brandon Bean talked about it. It's pretty much the upside selection. I think Keon Coleman is either going to be unfreaking believable or super underwhelming. I don't know if there's really a middle area for him.
So I think the Bills, I'm going to be honest with you, I think the Bills continue to try to copy the Chiefs.
Probably.
And I think what they've seen now, we saw that with the multiple tight end last year, which I think worked for the most part. And I think they're trying to do it again. They saw the Chiefs got rid of Tyreek Hill, and they were able to work a bunch of solid receivers. Now, Keon Coleman is the headliner, and he's the guy who by the end of the year I think is going to be the go-to player for Josh Allen. And I agree with everything you just said.
I disagree.
Who do you think is going to be?
Dalton Kincaid.
Yes, I'm sorry. Staying with wide receivers, yeah. I should say. Yes, I apologize.
No, you're fine. I just saw a lot of people saying, he's the new wide receiver one. I'm like, no, Dalton Kincaid is the wide receiver one in this offense.
No, Dalton Kincaid.
But it is interesting
because
this time last year, Josh Allen tells Brandon Bean, I want Dalton Kincaid. This year, he says the same thing about Keon Coleman. So,
Yeah, and if he wants him, he's going to get him. But I do think you have other solid players who can perform. Khalil Shakir, I love him. One of my favorite late-round picks last year. Curtis Samuel, again, can do things because he should be higher up in the pecking order. I think Mac Hollins is great at contested catches. I know he's not tremendous, but I think he's a guy who can do some things for you. And the best ball player I've been drafting in the last round every single time has been Dawson Knox because I think the two tight end set works for them. I think both of them can get opportunities. Fantasy-wise, it's Kincaid all day, but if Josh Allen wants Keon Coleman, he's going to feed Keon Coleman, and he has the right type of attitude, of course, you've seen on social media. Talented guy, but they have other players who can do things that maybe, like you said, Coleman struggles with, so they're building it. They're doing a good job.
They are super multiple, and they are super versatile, and I like it. I don't think Keon Coleman, we all know it, right? It's the 4 for 120 and 2 touchdowns, or the literal 0 catches from Gabriel Davis. I don't think it's going to be that much of variance for Keon Coleman. I don't think he's going to be consistently getting 6 for 80 and a touchdown, right? But I don't think his down games are going to be, because I think he can do way more than Gabriel Davis. So I'm excited about the Bills offense because I think instead of having to force feed somebody 160 targets, maybe there's just more kind of, you know, versatility with what they have. And of course, we have to remember too, once Joe Brady took over, this was a top five team in terms of neutral script rush rate at almost 52%. And Keon Coleman, if you watch some of his film from Florida State, he is an absolute machine in the run blocking game, which is what they lost with Gabriel Davis. So one more player and we'll close out with tight ends. One of my favorite players in the draft process, fell in the draft a little bit, dealt with some injuries, older prospect, but it's Blake Corum. I mean, such a similar player to Kyren Williams. I thought it was super interesting that he went there.
I agree, but I think he provides valuable depth. Mm. And I think that is hearing from Sean McVay. I don't think he fully believes that Kyren Williams can repeat what he did last year.
In terms of production or volume or both? Because volume,
the volume was the concern. I think he feels that he needs, he doesn't want to be in a situation where Williams gets hurt and he has nothing. So is Kyren Williams still a good fantasy pick? Sure. I don't think he's Justin Forsett, but I think that his volume is going to be cut back. I don't think he's a one-year wonder, but I think that he's not. I don't think McVay believes he can continue to produce at that level. And we've seen this before with Cam Akers and the multiple backs that he's brought in. I like Blake Corum. I like the landing spot. I think he's worth a pick. You know me, I do like to handcuff running backs and redraft. I'd have no problem doing it with Corum and Williams. I think Williams will be very solid. I don't think he's going to disappoint. But I think the volume will go down. And Blake Corum, what you see is what you get. He's great vision. He's tough. He can block. I think it's a perfect pick.
Yeah, it's just tough because we all were praying for one of these guys to get the Dallas landing spot. And maybe Dallas was like, you know what? The 2025 draft class is loaded at the position. So we'll just wait a year. We'll sign Zeke, right? And we'll just see what happens. And maybe we'll throw the ball 700 times, 180 of which going to CeeDee Lamb. All right, let's close out with tight ends. Look, we were doing the live draft stuff, and I was like, okay, the Raiders are on the clock. They're not going to take Brock Bowers, so maybe it's going to be the Colts or the Bengals, and the Raiders take Brock Bowers. And look, I get it. Brock Bowers is, he can play essentially slot receiver. He played in the slot like 55% of the time at Georgia. He can line up in the backfield. He can occasionally line up out wide. But man, 1 year after drafting Michael Mayer, start of the second round, I understand that Luke Getsy's there now, and Luke Getsy was in Chicago last year where the Bears were top 7 in terms of 12 personnel usage, so I would expect that to continue with the Raiders where they go 12, and you have, you know, Mayer and Bowers in the field, then you have Myers and Davante Adams, but this is, I kind of led the podcast talking about how one moment I'm like completely off a landing spot, and the next I'm kind of reconsidering. I've kind of been warming up to the spot a little bit just because, like, at the end of the day, I want to bet on the talent, and this is one of the best tight end prospects we've seen in a long time. But it's also more difficult to do that when you're so sold and set on him going to the Colts or the Bengals or the Chargers, which would have been crazy. But what do you think of the spot to the Raiders? Does this really cap his ceiling this season? Will they find a way? And that's the other thing, too. Like, he's competing with Davante Adams, Myers for targets from what we hope is mediocre quarterback play at the very best.
Yeah, I don't like it. I don't like it. I think it was a panic pick. And I think,
like, why would they not go Quinion Mitchell?
Of course. And the problem is, it's not what we think and how we measure the skills and the athleticism, yeah, which with Bowers is off the chart. It's how do I think he's going to be used in an offense with Antonio Pierce and Luke Getsy? And I don't think Davante Adams is losing any of his target share. And I don't think Jakobi Meyers, who was really efficient when he was healthy last year, is losing. So now all of a sudden, are we going to totally push Mayer back? I don't think so. So Brock Bowers is at best behind Davante Adams and I believe Jakobi Meyers, because you're still dealing with a veteran quarterback. Of course, you're going to have to, a lot of times when you bring the rookie in, I like Williams and Adunze because they're coming in together and you've seen that narrative, the rookies bonding together. So you have a veteran in Gardner Minshew. You tell me he's not going to feed Davante Adams? Yeah. You tell me he's not going
to
hit Jakobi
Meyers? Like, he was good
Myers
enough last year to support Pittman and occasionally Josh Downs. He's not good enough to support Adams, Myers, and Brock Bowers.
What wasn't supporting Alec Pierce? And this is my point, is Brock Bowers is going to be efficient. He's going to have the occasional big play, but he's going to disappoint in fantasy. I thought it was a terrible pick. It's a redundant asset. It made no sense. Michael Mayer in the second round and then Brock Bowers in the first round. And we can continue to hammer home his athleticism like everyone did with Kyle Pitts. And then we can say in the end, if it doesn't work, well, it's because they're misusing him. But it doesn't help your fantasy teams. I am disappointed in Bowers. I don't like the landing spot. I don't trust the coaching staff. I don't like the veteran throwing the ball. I'm out on Brock Bowers.
Yeah, like in one of my dynasty leagues, I have the rookie draft next week and I have the 108 and I'm trying to trade back for this reason. Now, to be fair, I also have Dalton Kincaid, so tight end's not really a position I have to address. But with all the quarterbacks, like, yes, is there a chance maybe Rome Odunze could fall to the 108 now with all those quarterbacks? Sure. But like, I don't want to draft Brock Bowers at the 108. I'm not as low on Brian Thomas as you, but I'm also not crazy high on him. So I'm looking to trade back into like the 110, 111 spot, add some more draft capital because of the class at any position is so deep that those late first, early to mid seconds, late seconds even are so valuable this year. So yeah, Brock, as soon as Brock Bowers went to the Raiders, I was like, yeah, because I have a spot where I could flex somebody and I could use an upgrade at flex. I was thinking maybe I'll just take Bowers and just double tight end, but I'm out. It's frustrating. Like for redraft, like there was only one player in this class that would have even had a chance to have a Sam Laporta type season as a rookie. It was Bowers, and that's gone now. There's no shot he does that. But I do think, you know, the late third, early to mid fourth round of rookie drafts, one of these tight ends is going to hit because yes, the class isn't deep, right? Last year we had what, Laporta, Kincaid, Mayer, loaded class, but the landing spots were all pretty good. You have Jatavion Sanders to Carolina. You have Ben Sinnott to Washington, which I love. And you also have Eric All to the Cincinnati Bengals. Like, one of these tight ends is going to hit. Now, Eric All, he has to stay healthy. He's had multiple season-ending injuries the past couple seasons. But I think as an overall receiving tight end, he's the best outside of Bowers. I think the overall probably best tight end after Bowers, in my opinion, was Ben Sinnott. And look, he gets to learn the ropes from Zach Ertz for a year. Cliff Kingsbury's offenses have been tight end friendly in the past. And then he's probably going to have a role this year. I don't think anybody thought any tight end was going in the second round, let alone Ben Sinnott. So I have a lot of interest, actually, in these, you know, later tight ends.
I agree. I Ben Sinnott, I'm very interested in. I love going late round tight end redraft. I always have. I think all of them have a chance to move forward. Theo Johnson as well. Eric All has to stay healthy. You said it. But these are – we've gone full circle from last year. Everyone said rookie tight ends never produce. Then Sam Laporta produces, and now I think because people are concerned about Bowers, they're jumping off ship. No, I think all of those guys you mentioned, especially Sinnott, have a path. Zach Ertz, obviously, is going to learn from Zach Ertz, but he's a lot more athletic, yeah, a lot more talented.
I wrote the write-up when he got drafted, and I led it with Zach Ertz and Ben Sinnott are polar opposite players, and that's a great thing for Washington. It's great for them.
That is correct. That's exactly right. And that's a situation where I think with a rookie, again, Daniels trying to find connections with some of his receivers could pay off even immediately.
Yeah, Sinnott has more of like the per play upside because of his after the catch abilities. He's insanely fast, 14 forced missed tackles last year in college, lined up all over the formation, 20% in the slot, 15% in the backfield in his career at Kansas State. Eric All, I think, has more of the like 6-7 catch type ceiling if he carves out that role. Obviously, they still have Mike Gesicki there, and who knows what's going on with T. Higgins. But he had such an interesting career because he spent his first 3 seasons at Michigan, transferred to Iowa for the 2023 season, had those back-to-back season-ending injuries, but like different roles in those two different offenses. When he was in Michigan, a lot of motion, a lot of underneath stuff. And then at Iowa, there was way more downfield stuff. He had 14.2 yards per reception in 7 games at Iowa. There was more plays down the field. He has enough speed to make those plays down the field. I think the thing about him is he's actually, in my opinion, from watching him, he probably projects better against man than zone. He struggled to find the soft spots in zone coverage a lot. But in man, he had good footwork, agility, and route salesmanship, which I think he's really interesting if he's all of a sudden, you know, maybe as early as late this season, the tight end one alongside Joe Burrow. And who knows, like they obviously drafted Jermaine Burton, but I think one of these tight ends, it could be Jatavion Sanders, who's got upside and an offense that has targets up for grabs. I think one of these tight ends not named Brock Bowers is going to hit in rookie drafts. And I don't know how relevant they'll be year one, but if I had to bet on one of them, given the draft capital as well, I would say Benson. I thought, again, we talked about it. I loved everything Washington did.
Yeah, there's a phrase Jay Morrison told me, beat reporter for The Athletic, cover Cincinnati. He says, what we always say is Joe Burrow gets his tight ends paid. And he's done that multiple times. So you're looking in Dynasty, I wouldn't sleep on Eric all. Mike Gesicki is a temporary stopgap. Yeah. Drew Sample, nothing. I'm curious there for sure, especially long term because he's so cheap.
Yeah, we could have kept going. I mean, this was a loaded class, but appreciate the time, Mike. I know you are pretty busy these days, but appreciate the time. Although I will say probably not as busy. I mean, how much do you miss college hoops right now?
I do miss college hoops, but it's funny with all the transfer with Portal Combat that Walt Liddell's talking about, it still keeps us in our frame of mind. So it's interesting.
Yeah. March will be back before you know it. It doesn't have to be March, though. It could be obviously the regular season, but yeah, that's, and again, college hoops is just one of the many pieces of content that we cover and offer at FTN Fantasy. So really hope everybody checks it out. And again, like Mike mentioned, if you're looking for daily or bets, it's all packed onto the one site now, which I think will be a lot easier for the user. And like you mentioned, it's kind of, we're giving everybody what they want. So appreciate the time, Mike. It's been fun. The draft is, it sucks the draft's over though. I mean, what do we have now? I mean, we got college or NBA playoffs. We got baseball. I mean, we have great baseball content. I just don't follow baseball anymore. I mean, I just can't do it.
And what I love is the NBA draft, which I know does not draw anywhere near, Adam, the same amount of betting interest as the NFL draft, but there's some great value there in those markets. I'm still cashing the Grady Dick over 8.5 draft position from last year. So yeah, we'll find something coming around the corner. NBA playoffs, NHL, MLB, of course, great stuff, and NBA draft in June.
Thanks for listening. As always, make sure you give us a rating and a review on iTunes or whatever platform you listen to the podcast. We really appreciate it. And of course, not just me on this podcast. I mean, Tyler Lochner has been doing a lot of great best ball stuff. I'm sure he'll be doing some podcasts as well. And again, best ball season, you've kind of alluded to it a lot. It's here. It's that time of the year where you all of a sudden realize your phone screen usage has been tripled because you're doing a million of these underdog drafts now that we have all these landing spots. So it's always fun. This is my favorite time of the year. I tell everybody all the time. I love watching football every Sunday. Love it. But getting to write about football, what we should expect, kind of making cases for and against players throughout the summer, it's my favorite time of the year. So I'm excited to keep doing the podcast as well as a bunch of great content over at FTN. So for Mike, I'm Adam. Thanks for listening. Talk to you guys next time. Peace.